You're listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. If you have a question or comment about today's show, Jay would love to hear from you at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also send an email to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. That's questions, the number 4, taylor@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back, Turning Hard Times to Good Times. I'm Jay Taylor, your host, and I'm really pleased to have Alistair MacLeod with us once again. And as always, whenever we have Alistair on this show, I like to remind you, strongly recommend, in fact, that you go to the research page of goldmoney.com every Thursday to read Alistair's weekly market missives. And they are, from my point of view, the most valuable piece of reading that I do every week in terms of keeping track of the big picture and where we're going and what's happening in the world. Last Thursday, the title of Alistair's weekly article was Inflation, Recession, and New Currencies. The prior week, his article was titled Russia is Winning the Financial War, and that was a topic that I had in mind to talk to Alistair about today, and I do want to hear what he has to say about that. Gold's got hammered $40 a day. Oil was down $10. It just doesn't make a lot of sense in light of all that's going on. But I think maybe we'll start out by getting some of his ideas about what he wrote about last week, inflation, recession, and new currencies, given the chaotic market conditions of the day. Thank you so much, Alistair, for joining us again.
That's very much my pleasure, Jay.
Ray Dalio recently said, made the comment, I think it's not something that somebody as brilliant as Ray Dalio has to make, but it seems to me that we're in for a lot of pain, he said. If the Fed's going to fight inflation, we're going to be in for an awful lot of pain. And then he sort of suggested that they wouldn't really be effective anyway, because he said that stagflation is going to be the outcome, which I think we have already. But anyway, looking at the situation now, maybe drawing on some of the ideas from last week's missive that you put out, how do you see things playing out right now?
Well, since I put that out, I did mention in it that we had the problem that we were heading towards, what they call recession, for the very simple reason that money was no longer being pumped into the economy. Mm-hmm. And I think I made the comment that quantitative tightening is dead on arrival. I mean, it is, basically. We had this same situation back in around about January 2020, I think it was, when the Fed had tightened and the stock market had crashed. It lost a third of its value. Bond yields ripped, all the rest of it. There'd been a banking crisis reflected in the repo market the previous September. And so the Fed then just cut rates down to zero. I mean, in other words, it couldn't actually take monetary inflation out of the system, or the inflation of the currency out of the system. The system has become to depend on increasing quantities of stimulus, currency stimulus, if you like. The problem we now have is that bank credit is contracting. And when bank credit contracts, it basically takes currency out of the economy. Because GDP is merely a measure of the quantity of currency in the economy, or more particularly in that part of the economy which is recorded by GDP, if you have contracting bank credit, which remember is sort of something like 87% of the currency in circulation, the rest being physical banknotes issued by the Fed. You can see that there's a massive effect on the economy, and that's what we're now seeing. So what's happening in the markets is that the market's attention, bearing in mind they're all Keynesians in the market,
yes,
their attention has switched from inflation, because they think it's either or. You either get inflation or you get a recession. You can't get both. Now, when you have what you call stagflation, then they get confused by it. They say, this is, our models don't respond to this, therefore we will ignore it. And basically what they've done is they've just moved from the inflation narrative to recession narrative. And we've seen this very much reflected in commodity prices. I mean, oil was down something like $9 today. I mean, a very, very big fall. But what's driving the fall in commodities and the gold price and the silver price is not actually the physical markets. It's the derivatives, which of course is, you know, the derivatives are the means by which the Keynesians respond to events. And so that's what's driven it down. But, you know, there's no more gold or silver or oil appearing on the market. The shortages are still there. Mm-hmm. I mean, people say they're backwardations and all the rest of it. I haven't actually looked at that aspect too closely. But I can tell you that there is no stock around, and these prices are entirely artificial. And at some stage, the attention will swing back from the recession to, oh my goodness, we have got inflation. We've still got that problem. And yes, we have that problem because we've seen prices rising at the CPI level in sort of, I don't know, 8-9%. And that is subdued government statistics.
Right.
And there's no way it's going to come back to that 2% level that the Fed and other central banks are still dreaming of. I mean, all they've said is that it's going to take slightly longer than we thought. And they're quoting everything. But the real driver behind this, they're saying it's supply chain issues. It's China shutting down Shanghai, or it's Putin. It's all his fault. You know, it's never, ever, the consequence of earlier monetary policy, which has been to basically just print money. And fascinating. Yeah. I mean, I've been rereading the situation in Germany in 1922, and nobody in Germany actually understood what was driving the purchasing power of the mark, the paper mark, down. You know, they didn't. They were blaming everything but the increase in the quantity of the currency, and we've got exactly the same thing today.
Why is that so hard for people to understand? It seems so logical. It seems like it's almost sitting in front of your nose.
It is. It is logical, and it is sitting in front of our nose. But I think if you're in the position where you have been running policy and you are in groupthink mode. Mm-hmm. You know, you're not going to, if you like, sort of think that actually what's happening is the consequence of my earlier actions. No, you're going to blame someone else. And I think that is the systemic problem we have in government and the running of government agencies. And it's not just in the sphere of money. It's in virtually everything government does.
Well, certainly, though, Alistair, there are some supply issues that come into play, exacerbate the inflation problem, I would argue, I would think, based on, when David Stockman was on my show, right at about the time that that Putin was going in, that Russia was invading the Ukraine, he said that if Biden does what he's threatening to do, that is the sanctions and take away the SWIFT system, that it was crazy as hell, that it would be more expensive, it would hurt Americans at least as much as it hurts the Russians. And you could argue, I mean, David wasn't talking about the Europeans, but you could argue that it's hurting the Europeans the most, almost, I would think. But that's certainly part of what we're going through, isn't it? I mean, it wouldn't be as bad if it weren't for this conflict in the Ukraine. Would you agree with that? Or let's say with Biden's response to the conflict?
Well, just imagine a situation where this had happened without the expansion of the quantity of money.
Right.
What would happen is that, yes, the price of oil would be driven up because we rely on Russia's exports. Various other things would be driven up in terms of price because of the Russian situation. But that would be broadly counterbalanced by a reduction of spending in other areas. And, you find that businesses would go bust more easily, perhaps. You would find mm-hmm. that individuals will be spending less on consumer items because they haven't got the money, if you like, to pay for the extra energy and at the same time go out to the restaurants. The reason that people actually pay for the extra energy and go out to the restaurants and go on holiday and all the rest of it is because the government makes the currency available for them to do it one way mm-hmm. or the other. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you look at the budget deficit since 2020, I mean, it's just it's an accumulation of something over $6 trillion, $6.5 trillion. That is the extent to which the government has financed the difference, if you like, of you know, the shortfall on in terms of their taxes and what they've actually spent into the economy. It's all that extra money that's gone into the economy that is driving up the prices across the board. So, you know, it's making the money available that has created the situation where, on the broadest base possible, prices of everything are rising.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. You know, I think it's Gavin Newsom in California that is sending out checks to people because of their energy, because of their gas prices going up. He wants to send out checks to people so they can pay for their gas. Well, it's not going to solve the problem by reducing gas prices by giving them money to buy gas. So it's like you say, it's just I don't know, it doesn't make any sense. So there's this mindset that we can continue doing this and not pay a price for it, though, right? I mean, yeah. And the U.S. thinks that its dollar is going to be here forever. You know, dollar hegemony. They don't see the risks that you talk about. We'll get into that probably in a couple minutes. They don't see the risks that you talk about, the dollar losing its strength or losing its reserve currency status. Or if it happens, it's a long, long, long ways away is what they think. And you know, behind it, of course, is the United States military that is always there, it seems, and has an ability to sort of force people to do what the United States wants it to do. So what in the world would stop the U.S., the mighty U.S. military, from being able to perpetuate this dollar-based system?
Well, basically, the purchasing power of the dollar just goes down and down and down. Now, I know today that seems an odd statement to make because the trade weighted has hit something well over 106. But that is really, it's a relative game. I mean, it's just, that's only because sterling and the euro are going down faster than the dollar in terms of their purchasing power. You mustn't look at the foreign exchanges to stand this game. Really, it's a question of what does the dollar actually buy in the marketplace? And we start with commodities, and we can see that apart from this blip that we have at the moment, we can see that commodities are rising at a very fast pace, and they will continue to do so. The manufacturers' costs are rising from all inputs, and that means that consumer prices are going to continue to rise, and we will have to have higher interest rates in order to deal with it. Now, I think the mindset of the central banks at the moment are almost to welcome the recession, because they believe that if you get a recession, then you don't need to put up interest rates, because that's the worst thing you can possibly do. And they would hope that the recession would take out some of the demand in the economy and allow prices to stabilize. But, you know, this is a world of Keynesian economists who don't actually understand that most of the volatility in prices actually comes from the currency side, not from commodities and goods themselves.
Well, we've seen, of course, with 2008, 2000, before that, the dot-com collapse. You know, we saw briefly with the COVID collapse in the equity prices, the asset prices. We saw that interest rates did collapse during those times. And, you know, I mean, interest rates are going down now quite a bit. I mean, the 10-year, I don't know, I saw it at 2.5% or something like that. It was up to 3.5 or heading higher very, you know, a little while ago. But now with this, with the equity, with the asset prices coming down, with commodity prices coming down, at least in the last few days or so, we've seen a big decline in the interest rates, and I suppose that's what they're applauding, and they think that's all going to be honky dory. So why would it be different this time? In my thinking, it has something to do with these supply issues that are part of it. But as you say, they address supply problems by printing more money, not less. I mean, COVID was a big, you know, big jolt to the system. It just threw trillions of dollars in the system to try to fix something that money can't fix, right?
Yeah, I mean, the fall in bond yields, I think, will prove to be an error in the markets. The reason I say that is that really, we have a situation where, as you say, I think the yield on the 10-year is something like 2.7%. Now, that is completely untenable. you know, the situation where inflation is running at 9%, measured by the consumer price index, and has the potential actually to go higher before anything else happens. The overall situation is just, it's just a conflict completely between having to deal with inflation and having to deal with contracting bank credit. And as far as bond yields are concerned, we are unlikely to see the foreign demand for US treasuries continuing to the extent that it has in the past. Here you've got China, which is now selling. You have got Saudi Arabia, which is also selling, and that's an interesting one.
Yes, it is.
And I think you'll find that foreign demand, which has really kept America afloat, or American government spending afloat, foreign demand for treasuries is basically falling off a cliff. So that really indicates to me that these yields should actually be rising. And if they're not rising, it is because they're being suppressed by monetary policy and the currency will be suffering. And all that does is it accelerates foreign selling of US treasuries. Bear in mind that foreigners own in excess of $33 trillion
wow.
of US financial assets. I'm talking about not just U.S. treasuries, but also investments in equities, corporate bonds, and all the rest of it. And I think about something like $7 trillion of deposits and near cash. So this is an enormous distortion in the dollar. And that is going to unwind at some stage. And it'll be very, very much to the dollar's detriment.
It sure would seem to be. It's hard to envision that. It certainly isn't something that people are expecting. I suspect that what most people are hoping for and thinking will come true is that inflation will be tamed back to 2% or whatever. They don't see the money in the pipeline and how that's going to eventually just drive prices higher. Let's get to the your article that you wrote the week prior. Russia is winning the financial war. I think the notion that we certainly don't hear that here. It's not part of the propaganda that we get in America. The notion that Russia could be getting the better of the U.S. and NATO is of course something that's just that's just never going to happen. But what evidence do you see that in fact that Russia is winning the financial war?
Well, the basic objective that the Russians have is to get America out of Europe. And this was accelerated on the financial side by NATO, led by America, introducing sanctions against Russia. So what the Russians have done is that they've actually benefited from this. I mean, their trade surplus has increased as a result of these sanctions. Mm-hmm. And this increase looks like it's going to continue. Now, the other thing is that those sanctions and following those developments, the more recent developments with potentially including Sweden and Finland in NATO, expanding NATO as it were, bringing weapons closer to the Russian border, basically, we haven't had a response from Putin yet. Now, I suspect that there will be a response, and mm-hmm. I don't think it is going to be all that nice for us. Bear in mm-hmm. mind that we have effectively ejected him completely from the Western economy, apart mm-hmm. from his sales of vital commodities, which he can continue to sell around Asia, and he's quite happy to do that. Mm-hmm. So he's now got no interest, if you like, in perpetuating the dollar-based system. It's not that he can take payment in dollars, because I mean, he was forced to default technically on payments of loans. Why? Because the Americans refused him the ability to, pay in dollars. So, he's got no interest in perpetuating a dollar-based world. So I suspect that what he might do is bring in measures which will drive the price of oil even higher. Mm-hmm. It's been indicated to me that one of the ways in which he is likely to do this is to encourage the Iranians to block the Straits of Hormuz.
Wow.
And remember also that the Iranians also are backing the Houthis in the Yemen. Mm-hmm. And This doesn't hit the news at all, but the Houthis have been attacking ships in the Red Sea, with missiles and all the rest of it. Now, I think that would probably step up as well. So you can see that it's actually in Putin's power to drive up the price of oil very, very substantially, measured in dollar terms. And on top of that, we have Saudi Arabia, which is trying to join the BRICS now, Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa. It's looking to join BRICS. It's looking to join become associated with the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. And, Mr. Biden is going over there to see them later on this month. I think he's going to get a pretty straightforward reception from Mohammed bin Salman. And I think he's going to be told the facts of life. This is not cutting up nicely for the dollar. I think that's really what it boils down to.
Right. And of course, Biden hasn't tried to make friends with Saudi Arabia. To the contrary, he called him a pariah state, I think is what he called him. And now, for whatever reasons, he decides he's not going to, produce oil and gas in the United States. He wants to go to Venezuela and to Saudi Arabia and places like that, whatever internal politics he's playing. But it doesn't seem to be shaping up very well. I thought it was pretty interesting. And so, just with a couple of minutes, 2 minutes basically left here, Saudi Arabia, of course, we had been very close to Saudi Arabia. We built the petrodollar with Saudi Arabia, the requirement for oil to be priced in dollars. Where does that leave us? If Saudi Arabia turns hostile to the United States, as it seems to be, and anti-U.S. and heading towards the other side of the world, where does that leave? That should also be very bearish for the dollar, I would think.
Yes, I mean, I think what we're looking at is the end of an era, in effect, and that era being, if you like, marked by the existence of the petrodollar. The fact is that Saudi Arabia doesn't sell any oil to America at all now. It's got no interest at all. And it's increasingly becoming focused, along with the rest of the Middle East, on being part of the large Eurasian market, if you like. And that's where it's going. So you're absolutely right about the rudeness as Mohammed bin Salman has sees it from President Biden about his behavior on the Khashoggi affair and so on. He's going to get a very rough reception, in my view.
Yeah, I'm afraid that's right. We're out of time. Unfortunately, we didn't get a chance to talk about how this evolution towards a new currency might take place. Readers should go to Alistair's June 30th missive at Gold Money to get his insights into how this evolution could take place, how moving towards a commodity-based money, gold-based money, something that's real, that stands behind, and the intrinsic value of the currency rather than this make-believe stuff that the Keynesians have forced us to use over the last number of decades. It's really taken us to the precipice, I think, of something really nasty. Thank you so much, Alistair, for being with us. We'll look forward to talking to you again sometime soon.
My pleasure, Jay.
Alrighty, folksy, that is it for this week. David Stockman is my guest next week. Nick Rodway will be with me as well, and I may have a special guest. Until next week, next Tuesday, goodbye and God's blessings to you.
Thank you again for listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with Jay Taylor. Please join us again next Tuesday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel.